Hello, welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
If you're looking for a podcast on traditional American folk magic, we hope you'll stay tuned.
In this episode, we'll be discussing hoodoo, root work, and conjure.
And in part two, we'll have an interview with Mississippi conjure man, Papa Toadbone.
It's an episode full of mojo and magic, so we hope you like it.
Stay tuned.
Okay, so we're here to discuss hoodoo.
Yay, hoodoo. The power of hoodoo.
Yes.
Hoodoo that you do.
So, let's start with how we got into it.
Okay. I think, I'm fairly sure that I got into it first, as far as, like, actually knowing it was hoodoo and, like, practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the way I trace it back is, at some point while doing the traditional witchcraft, study and practice, I started exploring a lot of fairy tales and folklore to try and sort of mine them for magical, information. And, for example, I pulled a lot of stuff from the W.B. Yeats, I think Lady Gregory collection of Irish folk tales. And one of those folk tales happened to be a really, like, dead on parallel to an Appalachian folk tale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking into that and realizing, well, oh,
that makes sense because, you know, the Appalachians were settled by the Scots-Irish.
Yes.
So that, you know, that makes total sense.
Exactly. So, I mean, you have this British Isles influence already coming into the Appalachian Mountains. And so I started looking into the Appalachian Mountains and sort of finding granny magic and thinking, oh, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, based on my home soil. And from granny magic, it was not a big leap to be finding things on hoodoo. So I started thinking, oh, what's this about? This is pretty interesting. And the more I read about it, the more I was like, oh, I've seen some of these things, you know, all my life, you know, like we were talking about in the witch bottle episodes, you know, the glass bottles,
right,
you know, and the windowsills and things. You know, so there's certain things that I was recognizing pretty quickly. And the more I looked into it, the more I thought, oh, this is the kind of stuff I've been wanting to do. This is home soil based. We're here in the South. There's a lot of magic that I really want to get into. And so at that point, I think we tried out a few little kind of hoodoo-ish things. Maybe I may be misremembering the order here.
Yeah, I don't remember what they were, if we did.
Yeah, but if we did a few little hoodoo things, and then I found a teacher, or I found a teacher, and we did a few little hoodoo-ish things, and then once I started studying more, we kind of expanded upon that.
I think that was how it happened.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
I know.
Time flies when you get old. But anyway.
I know, old age. There are people listening to this that are like, those young whippersnappers complaining about old age. I'll rattle them with my cane, I will. I'll give them what for.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Anyway.
So, and then I think once I got into it, I started talking to you about it.
Talked about it a lot, obviously, because, you know, you were excited about it. And I just kept going, that just sounds really cool and really, it was the same appeal that it had for you and that it was home-based. I really liked that, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we decided to try it more.
Yeah. I know some of the very first hoodoo-style spells I did were honey jars. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember trying to sweeten a couple people in my life that I was having rocky relationship patches with, or people that I needed to ensure that I was going to continue to have a good relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember doing a couple of those. And then maybe we did the witch bottle, which had a little bit of a hoodoo thing going on.
No, I think the witch bottle was way before that.
Was it? Well, no, it couldn't have been because we used the crossroads thing on the top as the seal. So I had to have known about it by then.
You're right. So. Sorry, guys.
Our memory is gone. We didn't take notes at the time. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was all kind of a jumble at the same time when we did that.
Right. Well, let's talk more about the crossroads stuff. We have done a lot of crossroads work.
Yes. And now that was coming through the traditional craft as well.
It was, because I remember the one ritual we did,
mm-hmm.
which was crazy powerful. Do you want to talk about that some?
Sure.
Let's talk about that. I still have some pictures, by the way.
Do you?
Yeah, that we took of what it looked like. So maybe we could post that
Sure, on the blog. We have that.
Or maybe in the show notes
was
or something.
Was it an indoor or an outdoor?
It was indoor at my house, remember?
Okay. Okay, yes.
And we did the treading of the mill.
Uh-huh.
Which, should we talk about that now? Or is that...
Yeah, we can mention that. That's a traditional witchcraft practice that involves, to the casual observer, what looks a lot like casting a circle, but it actually is completely a different thing.
Yeah.
You're actually turning space, really, so that you can enter into this other world.
Yeah, like, you walk it... Well, it's not walking. How do you describe it?
You're pushing.
You step side to side very forcefully while you're sort of squatted down, like your knees are bent.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like you're plowing with your feet.
Yeah. So you make sure to drag. And like I remember being very sore the next morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're breathing very forcefully. You slap your inner thighs to, like, with each step.
Mm-hmm.
So you step with your left, drag with your right, and then slap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you go, you get faster and you try to drag harder because it's sort of like you're digging into the ground, even if you're on carpet.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what you're doing, though, is you're digging into that myth, as Peter Padden put it, the mythic landscape. You're plowing into it.
And, well, and not just that, but you're also going up, too. So it's like a spiral. Like, well, as you're going, you know, your mind is being elevated while it feels like your body is being pulled down into something.
And it kind of depends on what kind of working you're doing, too. Yeah. Because if you're going, sounds really funny. If you're going one way, you're going up. If you're going the other way, you're going down.
Right.
So it just depends on where you're trying to go, really, and who you're trying to get in touch with.
But yeah, we found it really powerful. It was funny that the first time we tried it, we did it as a Samhain ritual, and it was, I remember we clapped instead of the slapping of the thighs because I guess
looking like this weird thriller video knockoff, like ding 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 ding
ding ding ding ding ding ding ding. I just remember we were so off, like kilter, and we weren't. It wasn't working at all. And then I just decided, I guess because I was kind of like embarrassed or something, like, you know, I don't usually work, I hadn't been working with anybody, you know, in a really long time. And it just felt kind of silly to be doing. But then I threw caution to the wind and decided to, you know, slap the thigh. And then, like, you could just kind of feel the power coming from it. And it was.
But do you remember, like, when we locked eyes and locked step?
Mm-hmm.
Like across the distance.
Yep.
Like it clicked perfectly.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. I definitely recommend that if you ever want to try that for some.
But you really do need to. What we've just described is not something like I wouldn't say, you know, go out and do that like right now. You probably need to read a little bit more, and I'll try to post some notes on the blog just so that people know what they're doing, because it's one of those things that's sort of like you wouldn't just walk into somebody's house unannounced. And you really are going into another realm.
Okay.
So you probably need to know where you're going.
Yeah, and it's definitely not hoodoo.
No, there's zero hoodoo. I don't know. Yeah.
How do we get out of this?
Crossroads.
Right. Yes. So we did this ritual while, as sort of when we were kind of dealing with Hecate a little bit and help contact her.
Mm-hmm.
And,
because she is a crossroads deity.
Right. And we had drawn out a crossroads in flour. Yeah, well, you had a big red, I guess, tablecloth that we put on the floor. And then we drew out four circles at each corner that we put plates over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a line from each corner in the center with a circle in the center. And then in that was, like, an offering bowl.
Yeah, I think so.
And that had a few pennies, I believe.
Rum or something in
honey.
There. Honey, maybe. Yeah, it would have been honey for her.
Yeah, but anyway, so that was one sort of foray into crossroads when we weren't even really.
Yeah, we hadn't made the real connection with hoodoo at that point. And hoodoo, the reason we keep mentioning this is there is a lot of magic that happens at crossroads in hoodoo. That's a place where you deploy spells. It's a place where you get a contact experience.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's one really well known. I don't really call it a ritual exactly, but practice, I guess, where you go to the crossroads for 9 successive nights, or the number of nights varies and the timing of it varies. Some people say like 7 successive Sundays or something like that. And on each night, you encounter a different creature or force of nature or something like that until finally on the ninth night you encounter a man dressed all in black, or some people say he's just a black man. And you, if you need to learn a manual skill, such as playing an instrument or, you know, gambling really well with cards or dice or whatever, that man will take whatever you're using, your dice or your guitar or whatever, and play with it for a little bit and give it back to you. And all of a sudden you'll have mastery of that skill. So there's this big current of crossroads magic in hoodoo.
Well, and I mean, it's even a little bit of a Christian lore that, you know, you can sell your soul to the devil at the crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Which devil is that? 'Cause that ain't Satan for sure. It's not,
well, that's what they would have you believe.
I know. It's funny how they confuse those.
Yeah, but luckily we are Christians.
I know. Yeah, there's definitely an idea that the man you would meet at the crossroads is the devil. And the funny thing about it is that works perfectly for me, coming from a traditional, I don't say coming from a traditional background, but working with traditional witchcraft. There is... the sort of master of the master of the witchcraft that you would meet at the crossroads in some workings, could be considered the devil, but not as in the satanic devil, more as in the sort of wild forest spirit kind of devil.
Mm-hmm.
And even that's not really a fair description.
I just don't like using the word devil.
I know, but I love it. Love it. It just makes people go all spiky and tingly. Like, you worship the devil? What kind of? Not the one you're thinking of, though.
Yeah, there's just too many connotations for that word for me. But.
Well, it's the devil you know and the devil you don't know. And I happen to know the devil you don't know. So, yeah. So we did these crossroads workings.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that led us to, that, like, it was a really good experience.
Yeah,
and that's not the only time we've done crossroads working. We've gone out to. I think the reason we did that one indoors was it had gotten unbearably cold.
Yes.
So we had to stay inside for that. But normally, if it's bearable outside, we will go to the physical crossroads. We have a crossroads fairly close to us.
Well, I think part of the reason we wanted to go inside as well was to experiment with bringing the crossroads to us.
Oh, that's right. Because we were trying to create this entire sort of indoor other world.
Right. So it was planned. It was just...
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. How does this all tie into hoodoo again?
There's lots of crossword work in hoodoo.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember where we were going with this.
Sorry. Again.
Mm-hmm. All right. But yeah, so I know we did that kind of work, and that connected us to hoodoo. We were like, okay, we're already doing this. So... it's not a far stretch for us to go, okay, let's look more into this thing that's really local.
Right.
You know, hoodoo is local to us.
What else did we do? We made those oils.
Mm-hmm.
We have made... because I know you ordered some from various mm-hmm. places, and there were some that you were less than happy with.
The Anariva, and I don't mind saying that out loud, because... I've even posted it on the blog. I'm not a big fan of them. If they work for you, that's awesome. Please keep using them. I'm not saying don't buy them at all if they work for you, but I've never had good experiences with them.
Well, some of them just didn't smell right. It just, like, you know, they weren't the right ingredients. And
yeah, when you smell her fiery wall, and it doesn't smell fiery or wally in any way.
Eva.
Wrong wally.
Sorry. So we decided to make some of our own. So we made
Crown of Success, yes. Which, if you're in the market, this is just a shameless plug for our...
Totally shameless plug. We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. We have an Etsy shop called Compass and Key Apothecary, which is where our email address comes from as well. And I have the link on our webpage. So if you feel the urge, please go visit. It's not very elaborate yet. I'm still working on doing some design for it, but...
but we do have some oils for sale.
We do have a pretty good catalog of oils, actually.
Mm-hmm. We have...
Uncrossing. We have Seven African Powers. We have...
Seven Saints?
Oh. All Saints. All Saints oil. Yeah, that was one of the things that we really wanted to do with this was make make magical products that would be accessible to people from any religious background that were just looking for the magic. So mm-hmm. that's why we were like, okay, Seven African Powers covers a lot of African diasporic traditions. Mm-hmm. All Saints covers a lot of people doing Christian and Catholic folk magic. And the Crown of Success. Yes. I love my Crown of Success.
Yes.
I just, like, we made the bomb diggity of Crown of Success oils. I'm telling you, like, I've used that stuff a couple times in the past few months and just been blown away by it.
I made my husband rub some on his hands before he went to his interview.
Any word on that?
Not yet, but we're still hoping.
All right.
Well, so we'll see.
We'll see how it works for Lane. But for me, I did two or three things successively. The biggest one I know of is I was applying for graduate schools. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, I had to come up with like a 25-page paper, basically, in a period of weeks. And I was able to do it, and that was not a problem. But it's one of those things where you're like, I just did a 25-page paper in a period of weeks. That can't be a very good paper. But I did that, filled out the application, dressed it. And this is a university that is, I think, top 30 in its field for what I'm wanting to study. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, dressed it with this oil and everything and sent it in. And normally for something like this, you have to wait, you know, a good while. I mean, I sent it in like right as they were, you know, the first week or two of them reviewing candidates for graduate positions. And a week later got a personal email from the people on the review committee saying, hey, you know, we're mailing out your acceptance letter today.
Cool.
But I just thought you'd want to know before the weekend and
nice.
You know, make you feel better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I was completely astounded. I was like, okay, 25-page paper in 3 weeks. Way to go now. So yeah. And then we also had a couple of other oils that mm-hmm. we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Fiery Wall was one.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought smelled awesome.
Yes.
I don't think I've really used that one yet. I mean, I know I've done a few protective things around the house, but I don't think I've sat and like done a working with that oil.
Yeah, I haven't either.
And then we also did attraction oil, mm-hmm. which is fun.
Yes.
Very, very pleasant smelling.
That was a good one.
Mm-hmm. Enjoyed that. Yeah. So yeah, so we got into the oils. And then what came next? Voodoo Wise.
Hmm.
I know I started taking that class with my teacher.
Right.
And learned a lot, quite a lot. Lots and lots.
Obviously, from the blog posts you've been posting.
Thanks.
They've been awesome.
Thanks very much. By the way, if you're listening to this and you don't go to the blog very often, this entire past week, we have been doing blog posts that are an introduction to hoodoo, including root workers of the past, kind of the history of hoodoo, root workers of the present, basic hoodoo spells, and basic hoodoo starter kit that you would need. Mm-hmm. Just all those kinds of things. If you're interested, please go to newworldwitchery.wordpress.com. So, all right. So once I started taking the class, learned a lot about different kind of roots and herbs.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a couple of different hoodoo workings. I know we did some honey jars.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And then, do you remember the one thing that we did that's hoodoo that just might stir up a little controversy?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, we talked about it before, but we did a pretty big hex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, big in the way that we did a lot towards the building of the mojo of it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it involved a couple of different angles. I mean, there was candle burning. Mm-hmm. We were chewing specific herbs and spitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
we extinguished the candle in toilet water.
I think, yeah. I mean, pretty intensive stuff. And then the final step was, it was interred in a cemetery.
Yeah. Which we do not condone, by the way. Do this at your own risk.
Yes.
It's usually illegal to dig anywhere in a cemetery.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to indicate whether or not we had legal permission or not, or whether or not we even dug. I'm just saying it was interred.
Yep.
Mistakes were made. I don't know. No. Boxes were buried, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah. So, but we're kind of remaining hesitant to talk about this. We want to let you get to know us a little bit better before mm-hmm. we start really talking about. And this is the only hex that I've ever done.
Yes, and other than I did the vinegar jar that wasn't all that effective,
mm-hmm.
And then I did a pay me now, which is not exactly a hex, except it was sort of a pay me or suffer, but a pay me or feel the heat.
Right.
Which is, again, it's not a hex per se. It was more of a, you know, do what you said you were going
to
do.
Right. And we're hoping to do a whole episode on hexes, and we're going to talk much more in depth about the one that we did together. And, you know, we're going to talk about the philosophy and the ethics of it then. But, you know, we want you to know that we don't go around hexing all willy-nilly.
Yes, this is not something we do regularly.
Or lightly.
Yeah. And I mean, my biggest thing is, if I'm doing any kind of hex work, I have to be convinced that it is justified work.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing for me. And this particular, the big hex that we did was justified because the person that was the target was in a position to hurt people, including children.
Right.
And so we looked at this and examined it and said, you know what? This is one of those situations where we're okay.
Yeah, and other methods weren't working. So.
Yes, and I mean, Lane had even gone through some fairly specific bureaucratic channels trying to get the right thing done,
mm-hmm.
and there was just no action. So we took it to the magical realm.
Right. So anyway, but we'll be talking about more about that later on.
Yes, but it is a part of hoodoo. That's right. Something that you should know. If you're squeamish about that kind of thing, it's possible to do hoodoo without ever, you know, doing a hex. It's possible to do hoodoo without ever doing any kind of curse. I wouldn't recommend attempting to do hoodoo without being fully aware of hexing and cursing, though, because mm-hmm. taking off those kinds of things is a big part of the work. You know, it just helps to be well-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
So
just to know about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, the doctors have to know the disease before they can offer you a cure.
Right.
So, if you don't know how to hex, you're not likely to know how to heal any better.
Good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. So, I feel like I've prattled on and on about this.
You know a little bit more about it than I do.
Well.
I mean, yeah, I've worked with it, but.
Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you what then. I'm going to, because I know that, like, I've taken the class in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I've also kind of, like, imparted a good bit of that to you. So we're gonna have a Lane pop quiz, everybody.
Oh, Lord.
So what would you give a beginning root worker as far as advice?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
I have taught you well, young grasshopper.
You're too philosophical for me this late at night.
Oh, goodness.
Well, one thing that I kind of had a hard time with was I was so used to Wicca, where it's pretty highly ritualized usually, and you use a lot of your intuition for certain things. Like, you know, say you find an herb and it maybe looks like something to you. Like, say it looks like it, like the leaves are in the shape of a heart. So you think, oh, this can be used for love magic. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's intuition, it's just based off your gut kind of things. So, you know, they don't have really specific rules. But in hoodoo, there is really specific rules. And if you use the wrong herb for something, even if you think it might work, you know, if it's not for that specific purpose, it can really backfire or, you know, bring about a totally wrong result.
Right.
So that was something I had kind of a hard time wrapping my head around. Because, you know, I wanted to take the basics of hoodoo and think, oh, well, you know, if you use that, like, I think I said something about using a lodestone for something. And you were like, well, I don't know about that. And I mean, right. I can't remember what the specifics were, but.
Right. And it's one of those things where I'm not trying to say, like, you know, that you have to do it my way or the highway. But if you're trying to do something that is hoodoo,
mm-hmm.
then. It's better to, it's not to say that you can't eventually improvise, but and this is my opinion, but you would learn to, you know, if you were learning to drive a car, you would want to learn how, you know, brake pedals and gas pedals and steering wheels and all that kind of thing work before you enter your first race.
Right.
You know,
that's a very good point.
You know, you need to learn the ground rules of hoodoo before you really tackle, you know, improvisation and all that. And there's room for it. Like what you were saying about the heart-shaped leaves,
mm-hmm.
that goes straight to the doctrine of signatures, which is what a lot of hoodoo is based on,
where right.
things are associated based on physical characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
But people, this is, again, my opinion, I think people jump into that too quickly.
Right. And see, the thing is that, you know, Wicca kind of lends itself to that a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me it did. I don't know about anybody else. But, so I don't know, I was really used to being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I snubbed that. Said, you will not do that anymore.
So, I guess my advice would be to learn the ground rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know your herbs, know your oils before you get all creative.
Where can they learn the ground rules?
Well, I mean, a few of them are some pretty good tips and advice on our blog. And then, you know, you mentioned a few books.
Yeah. Our blog is your only source for hoodoo expertise.
That is all you need, friends.
And you, too, can be a certified New World Witchery hoodoo expert. No, that's... Don't listen to that. That was lies. Lies and deceit. Yeah, but we do have some good stuff on our blogs. But I would definitely say...
I meant, like, resources. Not necessarily, like, you know, books to read and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would definitely say go to Lucky Mojo.
Yes.
It's a good place to pick up some good information. And don't just surf around on her Lucky Mojo shop site. She has several sections that are completely educational. They're not mm-hmm. purchasing anything. She doesn't necessarily want you to have to purchase anything. You know, it's all educational. She maintains this huge archive of occult knowledge. And then this other huge archive of nothing but Southern folklore and recorded information about hoodoo as it was practiced and recorded in historical documents.
Neat.
So, I mean... Lots of resources there.
Yeah, it's a really good website to mm-hmm. go to.
And you're reading a book right now that yes. I recently finished that has some good information.
Yeah, it's American Shamans by Jack Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had the pleasure of meeting him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really nice person. And yeah.
We're crossing our fingers that we might even get him on our show at some point.
Yeah, hopefully for an interview. But yeah, he wrote about different healing methods, you know, magical healing methods. Mm-hmm. He talks about Appalachian granny magic, voodoo, powwow, and is there one more? I haven't got that far yet.
Those are the main three that he covers.
Yeah. But yeah, he interviews people who actually do practice this, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was his thesis in college, and
mm-hmm.
he did a lot of research on it, and yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far, so check mm-hmm. that book out.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the people he talks to is Sheriff James McTeer, I think it's James McTeer, maybe John McTeer, but Sheriff McTeer, who is a very famous Carolina root doctor, who took down one of the duck buzzards. So I always think that's kind of fun to have that sort of living oral legacy
mm-hmm.
that Jack reported.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
It's very cool stuff. Yeah, there are lots of resources for hoodoo out there. I will say, be careful. There are some books out there that purport to have hoodoo information. And from what I gathered from other hoodoo practitioners, they're not the most reliable sources. One author, Ray T. Marlborough, apparently has some books that are out that have some interesting conjure information, but he mixes it with a lot of neo-paganism.
Mm-hmm.
And then... he later on mixed it with a lot of Santeria for some reason.
Hmm.
And it's not to say that there's not some good magical advice in there. Apparently there is some, but that it can apparently be very hard to get that information out of those books. And again, that's coming from people who have been in the root work community for a long time. Not myself, obviously, but there are several people that have been, you know, students of Catherine Ironwood. And you know, I think at least one of them is a moderator on a forum about hoodoo. has been practicing for a couple decades, maybe. Mm. So, anyway, yeah. So there are some books to avoid.
I remember when we first sort of got into it, we rented The Skeleton Key.
Oh, yeah, 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 the movie, yes.
Just to see, like, what was real, you know, what it was about. And you know, I had first watched this movie a while back because I just liked the name of it. I really like skeleton keys. You know, I have a tattoo of one. You know, their imagery really kind of speaks to me for various reasons. Mm-hmm. But, so anyway, I just thought it was looked like an interesting movie. And then turns out it's about witchcraft. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that... I actually really like that movie still.
Yeah.
I'll watch it every now and then.
And I've gotten to where I really enjoy it as well. The first time I watched it, I was kind of like, meh. But then, like, upon rewatching it, it's like, actually, if you ignore a few little things that are, you know, clearly plot devices.
Right.
And you just kind of look at it as, you know, this character study and cultural study, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I later found out that Catherine Ironwood, who owns Lucky Mojo, was a consultant on the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So she, you know, if you look at the stuff that's, you know, any of the stuff that's in the Hoodoo stores or, you know, the, what was it, the, I think I pointed out the Kundong.
Yeah, the Kundongs.
Yeah.
That were hanging in the.
Yeah.
The gas station type place when she goes in.
The gas station root shop, yeah. Bait shop thing.
It's funny when we were, I was watching this with a friend of mine who was Christian, but wanted to know a little bit more about what I do, kind of, and we had just sat down to watch this movie because we like watching, you know, like thrillers and scary movies together. Mm-hmm. And so like anytime anything would come on, she would like seriously and jokingly like make, you know, make comments or ask about it, you know, and be like I think in the movie the main character Caroline drives a, you know, a VW Beetle, and she'd be like, oh, Volkswagen, it just has nothing to do with Hooter, you know, like joking. But then, but then, you know, like the bones in the, hanging in the shop, she said, oh, does that have something to do? I'd be like, actually, yeah. And those aren't just bones. Those are coon dogs. And she was like, well, what is that? They're raccoon penis bones. She was like, oh,
she's like, I didn't really need to know that.
She was really thrown by it. But like, I don't know specifically what they're used for, but I do know that they are used.
So yeah, yeah, it's there's some really interesting stuff in that movie, and mm-hmm. I really like, I don't know, I just really like the I like the feel of the whole movie.
It's very gritty,
swampy,
yeah,
dirty.
Yeah, I love how they use the brick dust, mm-hmm. and once she lays it down, they can't cross it because they mean to do her harm.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and I mean, There's some validity to that. Like, mm-hmm. again, you know, Catherine Ironwood consulted on this film and kind of kept him honest, you know, insofar as they could be kept honest in the Hollywood film about this kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
So I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, they the main character's friend brings her to a hoodoo shop, and it's like in the back of a laundromat. She's mm-hmm. like, this isn't, you know, it's not really out in the open like a lot of pagan stores are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I wonder about the validity of that.
Mm-hmm. There's no, like, the Unicorn's Cauldron magical shop with, like, shop SHOPPEEXPR947 or something. Yeah. Yeah, it's very, it's, and, you know, I'm not saying that that's exactly how it is in real life, but I do know that even where we are, there are some shops that are kind of buried that you really have to know what you're looking for to find them.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you have to speak another language to get to them. So that's fun. But yeah. And one thing we totally have not even mentioned this, but the skeleton key kind of made me think of it. The skeleton key is mostly hoodoo, but there are little bits of voodoo in it too.
Right.
And that's something I think we should address. Hoodoo and voodoo are not the same thing.
Right. No, they share a lot of letters in their name. They are pretty far apart, actually.
Well, all right. Wow.
I didn't think it was that funny or silly.
But yeah, like, it's, yeah, okay, so hoodoo and voodoo.
Totally different.
Totally different things. Slightly related. I mean, they do both come out of a lot of African practices.
Mm-hmm.
But we really want to be very, very sure that people understand that voodoo is a religious system.
Right. With gods, goddesses.
Yes. So, yeah, voodoo has, you know, this whole pantheon of deities. Hoodoo does not.
Right.
Hoodoo, the way it's practiced here in the South, usually does have at least a Protestant Christian leaning. Like, most people practicing it are Protestant Christians. You find Catholics sometimes, for sure. You're finding more and more pagans turning to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then my one admonition there is, if you're going to do hoodoo and you're not comfortable, you know, if you can't say the name Jesus without twitching a little bit, then you may want to sit it out. You may want to find something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to be okay with Christianity and Christians and you know, Judaism and those religions.
Just because it stems from there and it has exactly. been incorporated into it.
Exactly. So, it's no different than being okay with your grandmother who's Christian or being okay with your parents who are Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just part of your heritage. With hoodoo, it's just part of the heritage. Doesn't mean that has to be what it is now.
Right.
I still generally prefer people, you know, root workers who aren't afraid to throw in a psalm every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly don't insist on them, you know, offering up, you know, prayers to the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost every time they do working.
Right. Yeah. Like I wouldn't do that. I'm not comfortable with that personally. But
but
that's the beauty about hoodoo is that it's like you said, it's more of a practice
mm-hmm.
than a religion, and you can bring your own into it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's not something that you have to stick with, you know, just one set of deities. You know, you really, because it's based exclusively on what you do to get results.
Mm-hmm.
So if what you do to get results, you don't really have to drag deities into it.
No, not at all.
Yeah. You know, what you do to get results can really just be, you know, putting herbs in a sack.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. No prayers, no invocations, just herbs in a sack.
Yep.
That's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah, that's a lot of what drew me to it as well. Is it wasn't it's so different than what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm. It's so functional.
Yeah, it's you're working all with things that you can see instead of like you know visualizing and conjuring energy and you know you're putting herbs in a sack.
Yeah, exactly. Good old herb sack lane. And
I don't want sack in my name anywhere. Thank you.
Does that mean I have to be herb sack? I'm no. herb sack core. That's so dirty.
No.
Oh, goodness. the unofficial title of this episode is It's Late and We're Tired. But anyway. So, yeah, I think that kind of gives a good general overview of our connection to hoodoo, mm-hmm. our interest in it. So, I guess we'll sort of draw it to a close there then. But if you will stay tuned, then just on the other side of this break,
we have an interview with Papa Toadbone,
who is a Mississippi conjure man of the highest degree. He says with his southern accent.
Yeah, we have a link for him in the show notes, and we have it on the sidebar as well.
Yes, yeah.
So you can check out his website.
Yeah, he and I have known each other through a couple of different forums for a while now, and I think you'll really dig the interview. It's going to be some interesting stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. So stick around. We'll be back after the break.
Hello, this is Firelight, creator of Inciting a Riot, the podcast. Come join the riot as I tackle tough issues in paganism, news, and living a modern, magical, middle-class life. Find the show on iTunes or become a rioter by following the blog at fire-lyte.blogspot.com. Inciting a riot, lighting a fire under comfortable thinking.
Hello, my name is Dave the Bard, and I'm the host of Druidcast, the podcast of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. Each month we present a wonderful selection of music, poetry and story, plus an interview or presentation by one of the leading teachers within the Western mystery traditions. So if you're a modern druid, Wiccan, witch, Celtic, Christian, pagan, or just interested in nature spiritualities, tune in to Druidcast each month. You can find us on iTunes or on our website at www.druidry.org.
All right, we have on the phone with us now Papa Toadbone from the Papa Toadbone Apotheca. I think I'm saying that right. Correct me if I'm wrong.
What, Toadbone Apotheca, yeah.
Papa Toadbone's Apotheca. There we go.
Toadbone's Apotheca, yeah.
Excellent. He is a cunning and conjure man of the nittiest and grittiest variety, and we're really glad to have him on New World Witchery today. So, Papa Toadbone, welcome to New World Witchery.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So, all right. I think to get started, let's talk a little bit about that that awesome, funky, nitty-gritty shop that you have. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I do actually have a shack here, on my property that is the storefront. It's not a walk-around and browse sort of place, but it's where people come when they know what they need or they need advice, and I have, of course, clientele. It's my working apotheca. And about 2 years ago, I decided to go online and develop a website, and that's the first time I'd ever done that. And I just kind of I'm a graphic designer by profession in the sunlit world, and I figured that I could combine my two vocations and build a presence on the internet as well.
Well, it's definitely one of the coolest shops I've seen online. I mean, it's got that real old time conjure style feel, and I love that.
I'm a sucker for aesthetic. So
yeah, it looks great. So tell us a little bit about what you sell and the services you offer, if that's okay.
One of the main services I offer a lot of people locally is just is teaching and counseling. Once a month, have free classes here at my shop, and it's under the banner of Coffee and Conjure. And it's generally, it's a social in the morning, and then I teach a class, and then we kind of hang out into the afternoon a little bit. But so teaching is one of my favorite services to offer. I also, at my shop and different places that I attend, I do divinations and advise people on what to do for their conditions. If a lot of times people come to me seeking my expertise or my help with something, and a lot of times rather than charge them as a professional conjurer to do the work for them, I'd much rather sit them down and teach them how to do it, and then gladly sell them the stuff to deal with, of course. but I would rather, it saves them money. I do. They do understand that, especially if it's your first time doing something, that, and since the current behind it is manipulating potential and whatnot, that they may not have the most ability to do it. But by all means, if they can learn how to do it, then it's the whole teach a man to fish deal. So I'd much rather do that. Now, if they really, 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 really want my services, then of course I'll hire on to I choose my job selectively. I don't just take everything that comes my way, but most times I'd rather sit somebody down and teach them how to make a mojo hand or teach them how to move some candles around what they desire. And I've had people come back and say that they've had great results from it. And that's what I like to do the most is get people doing it themselves. And because a lot of people, especially in the neo-pagan world, kind of, and I did it for the longest time, neglect what's immediately around them and kind of, look over time and look overseas with desire and lust, but there's something right here in our area that they may have overlooked because it was so close. Mm-hmm. So I like to teach them that. So they're doing something that's rooted in the very land that we live on, and that's very important to me. So
yeah, that's definitely a good point. Why order rue from ordered from Syria or wherever when you can grow it in your backyard.
So. Yeah, and I do a lot of wildcrafting, and that, like, in about a week, I'm going to be out and about over, just not quite in the Delta, but a little south of there, digging Dixie John roots, and that's, I've got a spot there I go to, and I get some excellent antique French bricks out of the river there that gets balled up into these nice, perfect little porous, looks like pumice almost, and that's just the best bricks I can find for powder nothing making red brick dust, and that's my top shelf stuff, you know.
that's good. I
like quality, you know. I like quality stuff, and if I can, the older the brick I can get, the more natural, made out of, and our antique bricks here were always made of out of local clay, of course. You know, we have it's either real a lot of clay or a lot of bog, but our local clay goes into a lot of our red bricks, and that's why I like to go out and find the old ones that were made from right here, and then sell it to people that live right here. Or, you know, better yet, teach them that they can powder up a brick just as good as I can if they have the patience to do so.
Yeah, but patience is kind of key there for sure.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Mechanically, it's very simple. But
yeah, it's one move over and over and over again.
But, and like I said, I'll make them the custom Moken hands for people's conditions. One of the main things I like to offer, and most workers do, is just setting lights. That's usually the first step. But it's just like visiting the doctor. You're not going to get blasted with chemo because you have a cold.
Right.
You know, they're going to start with something really small, and just to pinpoint what it might be. So, you know, people might come here like out of the box, want, you know, poppet work done or something. And usually I'll say, well, let's just set a light and kind of step back and judge it to see if anything else is required. Mm-hmm. So I do a setting light is probably the most common thing that I do. You know, not everybody comes wanting the big stuff done. Most people just want a light set or their cards read or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or a mojo hand, you know, they want the mojo hands. It's, and, you know, getting people to do it. That's the what I get the most out of.
That's very cool. Very cool. Well, can you tell me a little bit about your magical background? What brought you to root work in the first place?
Well, I grew up in the Gulf South, so naturally I knew what it was. You know, I'd heard of it. I never, as a child, I never experienced it or was exposed to it. My parents were extremely, extremely backwoods little white church. You mm-hmm. know, And everything was, of course, the devil. As you know, then they have been right, but they were they're extremely afraid of anything that challenged, you know, their safety, mm-hmm. their little safe little yard that they developed around the church. So, you know, rock and roll, hoodoo, the whole thing, that was all of the devil, and I wasn't allowed it. So, I know people nowadays that they're younger than me. Technically, they've still been, you know, quote, pagan longer than I have or whatever, because for one, you know, 16, 17 years old and, you know, the Mississippi Gulf Coast, we didn't have internet in the, you know, mid-90s. So, right. So I had no idea I even had the option to look. But, when I was about 16 or 17, I took a trip down to New Orleans and, went into one of the shops down there in the French Quarter. Back when, you know, that's a whole other scene nowadays. I don't want to get into that one. But back then, I went into the shop and you know, I had these, as I said before, I've had tingly little Protestant fingers. And I wanted to know what everything was, and I was excited, you know, and felt kind of dirty for it, too, and that just made it better.
Right.
But I ended up, I didn't know what was what, so I ended up buying two lodestones, which for the longest time I didn't know them as lodestones because the lady told me they were called magnetite. Hmm. But so I picked up two lodestones and I kept them in my pocket, and I still to this day have one of them.
Do I dare ask what happened to the other?
I have no idea, but I still have this one. I mean, it hasn't been magnetic forever. I didn't know the feet and all back then, but mm-hmm. I have this little corpse of a lodestone that I keep in my pocket today just to remind me of, because that was the first time. And spiritually, even as a kid with my parents being into what they were into, I still kind of challenged things. And when I was like 12, I would read about Zen and, you know, I tried meditating and things like that. Just for the, I didn't know what it was for. I just knew that I had a lust to do something. And so anyway, into, you know, when I was about 19 or 20, I read, you know, years went by after the visit to the shop, but I read the book The Truth About Witchcraft Today by Scott Cunningham when I was 19, which, of course, I quickly learned that there was no truth about witchcraft today in there, but it was enough to, you know, to inspire me to dig a little deeper. And I was quickly, I guess, disillusioned with what I experienced with a lot of neo-paganism. And later on, I look back and I wish I'd have kind of stuck with it, because there's occultists my age today that they know all these little things that they picked up in Buckland's Blue Book and whatnot when they were 16, and I'd never even looked at the book.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I feel kind of left out that I missed some of that back then. But I quickly left the New Age book section very disappointed, and I spent years just out in the woods, you know, doing it right, trying to. Depending back then a little bit too much on intuition, but looking back on it, it's certainly done me what I needed it to do. So that's my earliest roots with it. I spent about a decade as a recon. I did Proto-Indo-European reconstruction. That was my big thing with a continental Celtic focus, because I have Welsh blood, and I wanted to know a little bit more, you know, go a little further back. I became completely obsessed with Indo-European reconstruction. And then wanted to know all about the continental expressions of it. And that eventually led me out of studying the Gauls and whatnot and into Germanic studies. So that led me into studying the heathen lore. And that's really where the body of my understanding started to be formed. And that was probably in my mid-20s when I really started to get into that. And that led me eventually into traditional witchcraft. And all this time, that you know, up until, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I'm only 31, so up until about 5 or 6 years ago, I was still neglecting the very things that I really needed, and that was the land I was standing on.
Mm-hmm.
And after discovering, getting into traditional witchcraft and really starting to find a home there and things that I always wanted, I found there. I found the answers that I needed, and I found things expressed the way I needed them expressed. And I went out onto my land and I started to work directly with it. And it was through that like an old memory that I forgot I ever even had came back. And that's when I started listening to my land. And that's when I started learning. And instantly I was told to look into the conjure practices that had been here the whole time and I never thought to do. And it filled in the gaps. And I've told people before, especially when they look at me the way I am and what I do, that the traditional witchcraft is the main body of my beliefs and all. So if I were to go to, you know, the West Country in Britain, I could relate to them that way.
Mm-hmm.
But if I moved there, I would have to learn, kind of relearn conjure, because their sorcerous actions are dependent upon the land that they're into. That's why you have all these differences, you know, the world over, and the functions and the theory behind it all is the same, but what's used is different because of what's available. So rather than spend, you know, like I'd done in my early 20s, wishing that I were in the, you know, the mother country or whatever, back in Northern Europe or whatever, I realized that I for once embraced the culture that I was raised in. And that's hard to do a lot of times, because you grow up, especially in a rural area, and you look around and, you know, you think everything's elsewhere. You know,
right.
But when you're the sorcerer and you listen to your land, you realize that you're exactly where you need to be.
Right. Yeah. I kind of went through something similar where I kept sort of pining for that. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side of the big
pond. Exactly.
So, but then sort of realize, well, wait a second, we have a lot going on over here that's worth exploring.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so easy for Americans to forget that, because we're kind of expected to be culturalists a lot of times. You know, I know a lot of people, especially in the traditional witchcraft world, kind of come up against that wall where, you know, we're not in England, we're not, you know, English, we're still English culturally to a large degree for some people, but and you get into that whole, well, you know, you can't do this because that belongs to England or that's English peoples or whatever. And then you look around here and you realize that we don't live in one country. We live in a place with several countries. And I mean, even where I live right here on the, in the Gulf South, from, you know, Pontchartrain to, you know, east of Pensacola, you drive an hour north and you're in a completely different country,
right?
Different culture, completely different culture. And that's, and there's linguistic differences here that are, you know, I can take a 2-hour drive right now and be in a place where there's a generation that never spoke English, you know, yeah. And it's not because they just got here. It's because they were, you know, where I live was always back and forth between the French and Spanish. So there's, you get on, you know, down in certain parts of Acadiana and everything, and there's still a generation that never spoke English to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got that, where if you had a couple hours east, I can still find plenty of places without indoor plumbing. So
that's awesome. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so I never knew. Fellow Southern boy, a little further north up, but yeah.
Okay, good. Well, so, have you been this far down south before? Or?
I've been further south than that, but only Florida and Texas. I've totally missed the entire, okay, you know, Gulf Coast area.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, you should come visit one day. I'll show you around.
I will definitely take you up on that because I'm dying to get down there. It's killing me. My hoodoo teacher spends a lot of time down in Mississippi, and so she comes back with all that Spanish moss, like bagfuls of Spanish moss. Oh, yeah. I'm just salivating over it.
I use it in Conjure, of course, but a lot of times if you order from me, that's what your stuff's packaged in.
That's awesome.
Know, and some people just get excited over the packing.
Yeah. I love it. That's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. All the Spanish moss that I have comes from all of the old the cemeteries up in the Natchez area. I go and collect from the big oaks and everything in the cemeteries. So anytime that I supply Spanish moss, it's 9 times out of 10 that's come hand-gathered out of an old French cemetery.
That's funny. I wouldn't be surprised if you and my hoodoo teacher have run into each other a time or two.
Probably. You never know.
Because she does that quite a bit. All right. So you talked about traditional witchcraft and conjure. Are there any other magical systems that are part of your regular practice?
No. I mean, that's as seemingly a strange fusion as that can be. They work seamlessly together.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like I said, every culture's had their sorcerer's practice, and that may not have necessarily been the same as their religious practice. But since hoodoo itself is the remnants of an Afro-Caribbean magical system that came with a religious background as well in the Protestant areas that got lost because of restrictions on the way the slaves were allowed to socialize together. So what we were left here in the South, especially in the larger parts of the Protestant South, is with just the sorcerer's practice. And that's why it can fit right in into any religious understanding. That's a lot of, or I'd say that almost all traditional conjure workers in the South are Protestant. But so that's why it works so seamlessly with my religion and my sorcerer's practice of traditional witchcraft, because they have some root together, but also there's nothing in hoodoo that's going to contradict it, really, based on a dogma, viewpoint.
Right.
And a lot of the Afro-Caribbean religious practices aren't so much different from the traditional witchcraft. You get, you know, fatalism and manipulating potential and things like that. Like, one of my favorite explanations of how sorcery works actually comes from the Afro-Caribbean understandings, and it has to do with the mercurial current with the trickster.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows that Mercury is the messenger of the gods. Do people ever actually stop to think about what the message might be?
Mm-hmm.
They just know that he's messaging. Okay, and whenever you look at the mercurial current, you're always going to have seemingly two different sides to it. You're going to have the man at the crossroads sort of trickster guy. And sometimes you're going to have the more mercurial master, the light bringer sword.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets into the deceiver as redeemer complex.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite explanations about how magic works, and it backs up perfectly the way I try to teach people in this manipulation of potential, is and fatalism is very important in the sorcerer's worldview, in my opinion. But you have the messenger, which would be Papa Legba in the Afro-Caribbean traditions, and he's the messenger of the gods. And what he's doing is he delivers the message from the spinners of fate. And this is putting it in European terms, because that's the way I can relate to it the best. But he takes the message from fate and he delivers it to the gods. Well, since fate and the potential of things, the underworld, is the origin of all things, and the gods take the unmanifested potential of the underworld and they manifest it into the world that we know, and that's reflected in lore all over the world. So Papa Legba delivers this message from the spinners of fate to the gods to what they should manifest into the lit world and our lives. And when you meet Legba at the crossroads, what you're doing, it's a trickster. You're getting him to change the message, deliver a different message to the gods, so that what you wanted to happen manifests back out into the lit world. And that's how, and a lot of times in traditional witchcraft, they talk about how to manipulate fate or change fate. And even when you get into the more heathen understandings of how your deeds manifest back and things like that, it's still reflected in that story right there.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that. That's a neat explanation of that.
It explains it beautifully. And once you start to analyze it that way, and you can look and see, you can see how an entire worldview can would spin off of that understanding, because your worldview should never contradict itself. Mm-hmm. It should only express itself in every single every time you question something or look at something, your worldview is not going to contradict itself if you understand it. It's going to explain it even better. So every question becomes a new answer, and of course leads to a new question. And that's the way it goes. Where were we?
Let's get into some deep philosophical territory. Let's get a little lighter. And why don't you tell us a little bit about how you get your nitty gritty ingredients? How do you go about collecting all these things?
Well, a lot of it. There's some things that I do have to order. That's just some of the bulk herbs I order. But if I have it available, of course I'm going to go get it. Sometimes I can offer things like black hen eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And black hen feathers, I have black hen feet. All of those come from a local farmer who has black chickens. And he knows what I'm doing with them. And anytime he loses a chicken, he calls me out and I'll go pick it up and I'll do what I need to do with the parts and preserve them how they need to be preserved. And sometimes I'll go out and pick up a dozen black hen eggs from him. And the first black hen products I ever offered in my apothecary were my hens. And I had them for eggs, but Mr. Possum saw otherwise, and he decided to he ate them. And I was left with a couple wings and some feet. I said, now I have wings and feet to sell. And that was the first black hen feed in my shop ever. Came from my egg hens that the possum ate. So.
Yeah, that's definitely taking a lemon and making lemonade. That's for sure.
Yeah, of course. All of this it should be. Mm-hmm. I intended on selling black hen eggs. I ended up selling black hen parts, but so it worked out.
That's great.
There are other. I have other people that a lot of times will call me up, and local people that just and seemingly normal people also that just they understand that I'm. I'm a strange fella, and I like dead things. So they'll call me up and say, "Hey, we had to kill a rattlesnake. Do you want it?" Or, "Hey, come pick up, what's left of the turkey we killed today." So I'll run around and pick up parts, and that's where a lot of the animal curios comes from. It's just, what roots I can, I'll dig. In my yard, I have at least one wild or planted plant for every. Planetary current. So if in a fix, I always have something right here that I could go wildcraft.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people come looking for specific ingredients, and sometimes those I have to order just to have them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. That's I like that. I like that you're kind of known as the guy to call when something dies. That's kind of cool.
What was funny is last week I found a dog. It was a little dog, and she was lost, and I picked her up and brought her home. But twice I made mention that I found a dog, and twice I was asked if it was dead or alive. People, you know, if I say I found an animal, it's something that I've snatched up off the road somewhere. But, but the dog, she was very much alive, so, and stayed that way. She stayed that way.
You got to make that distinction as well, I'm sure. Oh, goodness. Well, what advice would you give to root workers who are just beginning out there, just getting started with all this?
The best advice that I can ever give, and I give this to my students a lot, is to learn sorceress theory. Don't try to learn, concentrate on one culturally bound set of recipes. Like a lot of times you run into. Also, you have people that first getting into things, they're going to go out spell chase. They're going to want to, and people that's ever spent any time in chat rooms back in the late 90s involving paganism, you always had people coming in spell begging.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a lot of people that they think that you just amass this recipe book of spells, and that's where it is. But the truth is that you learn the theory of it. Just like you can learn a few guitar songs and can play those guitar songs well, but you'll never play guitar until you learn theory. And if you learn theory, then theoretically you could play any song that's ever been played.
That's a neat way to look at it.
The same applies to sorcery. What is that?
I was just saying that was a neat way to look at it.
Oh yeah, learn the theory behind it, and you can do any of it, and that way you don't run into stuff like, people come to me and say, I need to do, this, like, you just name a condition. I need to do this. And a lot of times they're looking for traditional things that in this area that are known to be used, right? And if that's the case, you need to know what's usual. You need to know what's traditional. But a lot of times, if you understand how it works, you know without even having to know prior what to do. Because you know the functions and the theory behind it. And that's where it really, really, really becomes important. Mm-hmm. That way you're just not trying to memorize lists of correspondences, and you'll be more fluid and improvisational.
Right. That way, like, if you kind of know why a mojo works the way it does, then it doesn't matter if you have a little red flannel sack or not. You can do the same thing with the ingredients at hand.
Exactly. And speaking of, like, the red flannel sack and all, you think about what's available on the land, and that's what becomes tradition. We have red flannel here in the South because of the cotton crops.
Mm-hmm.
And in China, they use red silk.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, they use red linen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So red's important. So that's the common thing to have. But what's the wisdom behind it isn't whether it's, like, if you're in England and you want to make them an amulet pouch, which, I mean, the mojo hands are are just what we call that thing. It's not just something here. You know, they have them in Mexico as amuletos, and then you have in Europe you have you have charm bags and all. But it was the red was to quicken it, to give it life.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also just what was available in the South. Everybody had red flannel long johns. You wouldn't go out and just cut up some good flannel. But when your long johns ran out, you could cut them up and have scrap material, and guess what you can make out of that?
Mm-hmm.
A mojo. And it's all about what your land provides you. And a lot of people get stuck in these ruts trying to make it. And as far as hoodoo goes itself, there's never been one thing that was hoodoo to begin with. And the tradition, what's become traditional, developed quite recently. But you use what's available to you. So if you need to make a mojo hand and you just have red linen, fear not. You don't have to rush out and try to find red flannel, or you'll never have a mojo hand, because you're making a charm bag. And the Crooked Path Journal that you and I both were in with your Crossroads essay, right?
Yes, sir.
Very good essay, by the
Thank
way.
You.
I enjoyed that.
Thank you. I enjoyed yours as well.
Well, thank you. And, well, I presented the mojo hand as the well of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it is. And then that's the function behind it. And then things like that come from the understanding of the theory of what you're doing. It's you know, the function at the bag, not the bag itself, that's the important part. But so, yeah.
All right.
And then every little thing can be expressed just that. I mean, when you start to really understand it, you'll start to see how things that you can change, because you don't want to be stuck in tradition just because it's traditional, because that leads to fundamentalism. But you don't want to make haphazard changes either. But when you understand why it was done that way, then you can start to manipulate based on what you have available.
Right. You really have to strike a balance between understanding, you know, why something is done traditionally and your immediate needs. But at the same time,
I asked somebody one time, I said, how did the red flannel bag become traditional, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, was it traditional because someone was just bound by some, you know, tradition with an unknowable origin? Or was the tradition using what you have on hand?
Right.
The tradition isn't so much using the red flannel as it is using what you have. They just so happen to have had red flannel.
Mm-hmm.
And that became the tradition.
Yeah, it's like the story about grandma's ham and how she always cut the ends off, and so generations of women do the ham that way. And if somebody finally asks them, why do you do it? And like, oh, it makes it taste better. And grandma says, no, I just didn't have a pan big enough.
You didn't have a pan. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that falls into to fundamentalism and people that spend more time trying to, they want to argue over what is and what ain't, and they forget to just go out and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big thing for me. Is, you know, you spend a lot of time theorizing about it and you don't go do it, then you can get into a real rut, becoming a little bit.
Oh yeah, you can. And then you become an armchair cultist, and what have you done with it?
Yeah.
You have an interesting hobby and a great body of knowledge, but
mm-hmm.
you never apply it because you get caught up in trying to make sure everything's like culturally and traditionally sound. And that's on one side. And then on the other side, you have people that just throw it all to the wind and say, I'm going to do what I want to. And it's not, you know, and there's a, you got to have that wisdom down the middle. But then that's where wisdom's always found, in the middle, in the liminal places.
Mm-hmm. That's very well put. Very well put. Very cool. All right. Well, Papa Tobin, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
I enjoyed it.
And we'll look forward to hearing more from you in the future, I hope.
All right. Yeah, anytime, man.
We'll definitely be putting a link to your Apotheca on the website. Are there any final thoughts you have for our eager listeners?
Get out of the house and go do it. Don't think about it. Don't. Yeah, put it this way. A lot of times in life, people do what I refer to as wish-eyeing. A lot of people say, I wish I.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to live my life doing things that other people would say wish I, too. So don't be a person that says wish I. Go be the person that's doing it. So put down the book and go dig some roots.
Amen to that.
All right.
Love it. Well, Papa Dobon, again, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
The Appalachian Mountains have always captured the American imagination because of their unique beauty and the unique people inhabit them. Hello, I'm John Norris Brown, host of Podcast Appalachia, a podcast dedicated to the people, history, culture, and society of Appalachia. In each episode, I examine a topic related to the Appalachian region and people in an attempt to cut through the various stereotypes, myths, and legends and capture the reality of the region. Whether you're a native Appalachian or just someone with an interest in Appalachia, I hope you will join me for this fascinating journey. You can listen to Podcast Appalachia at podcastappalachia.blogspot.com or look us up on iTunes. I look forward to hearing from you soon.
So, that's it for our show today.
We'd like to thank Papa Toadbone for being on with us. We really enjoyed having him as a guest. He's just got some really cool things to say, some really interesting information. So
next time, well, hopefully we're going to be changing it up a little bit. We talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, introducing a few new segments and
mm-hmm.
making things better for you all around.
Yeah. Hopefully, if you're staying tuned to us for an hour and 15 minutes, then, You're already enjoying us, and we're just going to give you more love. We're going to get chubby on you.
Oh, Lord.
That sounds awful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's right up there with herb sack quarry. Oh, goodness.
Okay, well, thanks for listening.
Yes, and if you want to contact us, please feel free to drop by the blog at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Or you can email us at compassandkey@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
And as always, we really appreciate you tuning into us. And
be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.